Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly's. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I started coming along. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
All right. Today's, we were supposed to do the part of this yesterday. Prolific Builders, what we're doing it today. Prolific Builders, 2 months versus 2 hours, 619-768-2945. I got program notes on this one for those of you who are online on Blog Talk Radio. If you go to our page there on the Solar Landlord or It's My House TV for today. Once again, it's titled Prolific Builders, 2 months versus 2 hours. And what do I mean by that? You got a lot of people out there due to the pandemic that are at least 2 months behind on rent. Some are over 12 months behind. Some could be 18 months behind or even longer. And now that the courts are back open, many are facing eviction or foreclosure. So what can you do? Well, and a lot of people are trying to, you know, get government assistance to pay the back rent or that, this, that, or other. So that's why I said, well, 2 months versus 2 hours. And I don't have a silver bullet, but it might be a silver bullet for some. My whole philosophy is if you're 2 or more months behind, what can you strategize to produce the money that you need if you want to stay there and earn that money within a 2 hour period of time, 2 to 8 to 10 hours worth of time, and earn that back that money back? So one strategy that I recommend is one of the reasons why I played the Nellie Fuller piece is because you need to get some social capital. Now, the prolific builders that I'm going to mention today, with the all within the nine friends strategy, which operates off of social capital, all right, are the Amish, the Mennonites, and Kingdom Hall. Kingdom Halls are basically the worship centers for people who are Jehovah's Witness. And I'm not saying that you have to adhere to any of their religious practices or anything like that. But what these three groups of people or communities of people do have is they're prolific builders. They build with no mortgages, for one, no institutional financial mortgages, no FHA loans, no VA loans, nothing like that. And just 2 days ago, I was running errands yesterday, so that's why I didn't come on and say anything. I was trying to catch my breath from all that ripping and running I was doing in the early morning before the show started, but got to start the podcast on time. But anyway, Ben, I was talking to somebody yesterday morning, and they told me Kingdom Halls, which that's where the Jehovah's Witness worship. You know what? And then the next time a Jehovah's Witness knocks on my door, I'm going to have a conversation with them. Kingdom Halls oftentimes are built in either 1 to 2 days. We're talking about a 4,000, depending on the structure. But I was reading up on one where they built a 4,000-square-foot structure in a day. No mortgage. Now, with the Amish, the Mennonites, and the people who put together the Kingdom Halls, there's planning involved. So that's one of the things that we'll be doing. We have a call at 4 p.m. today. It'll be our first strategy session because that's some of the things that we'll, you know, we want to replicate the Nine Friends offline. We want to replicate the, you know, the nearly, you know, the, we won't be building shotgun houses, but we want to replicate that offline too. So we'll be back with more of that. And, you know, whatever people do in 2 months, it can be done in 2 hours or less. All right, because we're not trying to build a 4,000-square-foot structure. We're just trying to deal with something less than 400 square feet. On that note, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Keep me wondering why.
6192945. We got that open mic element on practically every day. But let's see. One of the trending topics out here is St. Louis, Missouri, cracking down on Airbnb problem properties. If you guys want to chop it up about that. And then we have an assignment for you guys that want to participate on this coming Friday, and today's Wednesday, middle of the week, we shall be discussing the film Black Gestapo. All right? So, you got tonight, we got today, well, let's say tonight. When I watch stuff, I watch it at night. So, Friday... Oh, wait a minute. That's Black Gestapo on my phone. All right. Black Gestapo, that's the film that we're going to be discussing Friday. It was done and released in 1975. And that will be the topic, at least lead-off discussion, if we don't go a whole 2 hours with it. This coming Friday, Black Gestapo. So if you have not watched the film Black Gestapo, and that's Gestapo, Black Gestapo, released in 1975. You can go check it out on YouTube for free. So you got tonight, Wednesday night, you got Thursday night, and then Friday morning, we're going to be discussing the black film, or the film, Black Gestapo. All right, so I'm putting that out there right now. Let's see, like one of the trending topics, like I see in St. Louis, I guess the city officials here are cracking down on some of the what they call problematic Airbnbs. And they're on the radar right now, too, Airbnb, particularly in these larger cities. But what we started out with earlier at the beginning of the program, prolific builders, 2 months versus 2 years. I'm really impressed with the Amish, the Mennonites, and the Jehovah's Witness when it comes to building. And matter of fact, it's an article I wanted to read to you guys. Let's see, Kingdom Hall. Let me look it up so I can get it. Where, and like I said, you don't have to. Here we go. I found it. Let me read it. Jehovah's Witnesses build hall in a day. All the labor was done by church volunteers and church members. All right, that's what I call social capital. All right. It's a miracle. I'm reading from the article. With 900 pairs of hands, $60,000 in donations, and months of planning, a group of Jehovah's Witnesses built an entire worship hall at its Outer Banks beach town in a single day. All of the labor was done by volunteers, which I call social capital. People from the ages of 4 to 75 arrived from Ohio, South Carolina, Kentucky, Virginia, and across to North Carolina to give their time and expertise. Electricians installed wiring and carpenters erected interior walls, while children stuffed insulation into the freshly shingled eaves. By sundown on October 19th, the 4,000-square-foot single-story building was complete. NAGS Head Building Inspector John Brabrand said it was the fastest construction of a structure that size that the town has ever seen. It was just amazing to watch, Brabrand, whose inspector said Wednesday, shortly before issuing the final occupancy permit. They were so organized, they had everything there ready to roll. Everyone had a job. Kids were working alongside their parents and grandparents. It was really, really neat. It is a well-built structure, too, said the building inspector. They went over and above what they had to do. That would be a good place to be during a hurricane. Jehovah's Witnesses have been living on the Outer Banks since at least 1960, said Mike Costin, who supervised the Kingdom Hall construction. Originally, they traveled to Elizabeth City for meetings and study sessions. By the late 1970s, they had purchased a house on Blackman Street in Nags Head to hold their three times weekly gatherings. Okay, that's because I'm looking for blueprints here. Three times weekly, all right, meeting. When the group got too big for the home, all right, they started a home. Members moved their meetings to the Outer Banks movie theaters. 8 years ago, they bought a bigger house in Nags Head and renovated it. But having their own hall has always been a dream. We feel like there will be much more growth in our local groups now that we're in much more visible, said Carlson, a 41-year-old Duck resident who owns a custom home construction business. People have seen the building already. Now they'll start to see the brotherhood, unity, and support. You know what? This is a blueprint. Now, built on a one-acre lot on Baltic Street. Now, this catches my attention because an acre of land is relatively easy to pick up in many places around the United States or even the real world. And he mentioned Baltic, and I quite often play balling on Baltic. I play it here at least once a week. But this is a real Baltic Street, though. Okay. Let's see. All right, this is a lengthy article. I'm posting this up on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV. And let me go do it right now. If you want to read this article in its entirety, go to Facebook. Our Facebook page is It's My House TV. And the article is posted right now, thanks to the beauty of technology. And the article is titled, Jehovah's Witnesses Build Hall in a Day. All labor was done by church volunteers and church members. Now let me read it to It's My House way, that title. Jehovah's Witnesses Build a Kingdom Hall in a Day, and all labor was provided by social capital finance. And I'm updating my program notes as we speak right now. I have online, well, if you guys are on our Facebook page, not Facebook page, It's My House TV blog talk thing, for the caption for this show and the notes, I have Amish Economics, Amish Social Capital Finance. Matter of fact, it's active financing. I got Mennonite . Okay, I'm changing that. I'm updating that to social capital financing. All right, Kingdom Hall, social capital financing. Now I got the Nine Friends Strategy, and I'm adding one more onto this. It's My House social capital financing. Okay. All right, I've updated that on our program notes. And I was able to do that on my laptop. And let's see, I'm going to see if I can update by phone as well. While I'm doing that, I want you to listen to this is a little two-minute thing about Frank McWhorter, Free Frank McWhorter. We featured Free Frank McWhorter on here before. He was a former slave, bought his freedom, and it is documented that he built the first black-owned township in the United States. When he built it, the place was called New Philadelphia, Illinois. And, of course, he was the mayor of that town as well. Now it's a historical site, but he built that town. I mean, although he bought the land out of his own pocket, bought 80 acres of land. But then he used social capital to build it.
Just ask for justice, I mean, and be very specific about what you're talking about in the process. Get away from the slogans. Go in, if I'm talking to anybody who's a politician, go in with a list of things, always. Just don't go in with abstractions and say, well, we black people would like to have our freedom. We'd like to have better neighborhoods. We'd like to have better schools. These are titles, and that's an excellent start. But you have to be specific. In my school, I want this to be taught. So that when I walk out of that school with a piece of paper in my hand saying that I have graduated, I want to know exactly what I'm going to be doing with at least this first part of my existence. What are the opportunities available to me where I can walk in a door and present my diploma, my degree, and say, this is what I have learned, and I understand that in this place where I am now, I can use what I have learned in this place where they have sent me as of this morning, because I was in that university day before yesterday. I took a day off to rest. Now I'm coming in ready to go to work in this place, because this is the place where I can use what they taught me in that university down the street. And I'm in this place where I knew that this is the place that I was going to come to so I can make money to take care of all the things that I am required to take care of in a constructive manner. I can gain that money here by giving my services to this facility, because I knew about this facility before I ever left that university, because that's the kind of university it is. It doesn't teach you just a whole bunch of stuff and tell you to go out into the world and change it, and you don't have an idea of how to even get started anywhere. Not a name, not a phone number, not an address, not an idea of where you can use USE, what you have been taught.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it, because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward, because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right, so today in the federal courts of Washington, D.C., the Cherokee Nation was dealt a huge blow in their fight against the freedmen. Now, for those of you that don't know, freedmen are the descendants of slaves and free black people that were living on Cherokee land in 1866. And in 2007, the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma, this is a western band of Cherokee, by the way, Osceo, for those of you in Cherokee Nation, they voted to, I guess that I'm used to saying disenroll, So they chose to disenroll or to take the citizenship of 3,000 descendants of free blacks and former slaves of Cherokee Nation members and take away their citizenship. Now we were fooling. Nope, you didn't read the treaties well enough. You didn't read the treaties word for word, and we're voting to revoke your citizenship. Those freedmen took the the Cherokee Nation to court. I'm Comanche, so I keep wanting to say Comanche, but this is Cherokee we're talking about, not my tribe, Cherokee tribe. And so those freedmen sued. Now, to go back and just do a little bit of history on the Cherokee belonged to the five civilized tribes. And the five civilized tribes were in the southern region of America. They were the Choctaws, the Creek, the Seminole, the Chickasaws, and the Cherokee. And the reason why they were considered civilized tribes was because they were assimilating into white culture. They owned land. They owned property. They were dressing as white people. They had converted to Christianity. So they were assimilating into white culture. And one of the things that they were assimilated into is the farming style of the whites, which included slaves. So they were purchasing slaves. And John Ross was one of the biggest slave holders in the Cherokee Nation. And John Ross took the federal government to court when they were trying to remove the five civilized tribes out into Oklahoma. And he won. He took it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he won the ruling that they had the right to their land and their property and able to stay there. And President Andrew Jackson said, good luck enforcing the judgment. You got a judgment in your favor. Good luck enforcing it. I have the military, and you're going to be escorted off of your property. With those tribes going on what is now called the Trail of Tears, were also their slaves. That's something they don't talk about a lot. In fact, I even had a Cherokee person, Eastern Band Cherokee person, and maybe they were talking about the Eastern Band, actually tried to tell me that there weren't Native Americans fighting for the Confederacy, and that there weren't any Native Americans that owned slaves, when there is so much evidence that they did. And this person claimed to know their history, which is really scary because they obviously didn't. Now, the Eastern Band Cherokee in North Carolina, they didn't go to Oklahoma. They resisted. They stayed. And so the Cherokee band has broken up into different bands. Those bands were even more divided during the Civil War. Now, during the Civil War, the five civilized tribes broke up. The Choctaw and the Chickasaws were solidly Confederate. The Creek and the Seminole were solidly Union. The Cherokee had internal strife as to which side they were going to go to, and the majority went with Stan Waddy, one of their chiefs, into the Confederacy, and Stan Waddy actually became a Confederate general. He was actually winning a lot of battles too. And a minority of the tribe went to the Union. So in 1866, the reason why it took so long to free the slaves of the five civilized tribes, or especially the Chickasaw, Cherokee, and Choctaws, is because these are sovereign nations within the United States. They fall under the executive branch of government, the federal government. And being a sovereign nation, Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation had no influence at all under these sovereign nations that are the different Indian tribes. So in 1866, there's a treaty that is signed, and one day, all of the enslaved people that belonged to Cherokees and Choctaws and Chickasaws were all free. They woke up one morning, had breakfast, and their master said, "You're free. Go pick out a tract of land, go farm it, have a happy life. You have the same rights and privileges as a Cherokee. You're entitled to land. You know, go have a happy life, go live in peace." Some of them, there wasn't a Jim Crow era or a Klan version of any of the freed Indian tribes. It was just one day you were free and you're equal with the same rights and privileges we have. So you can enter into public office, you can be law enforcement, you can vote, you can, you know, be outlaws if you want. I mean, they were equal. It was just one day, okay, you're free, good. And so that's the treaty that the freedmen are citing in their argument, is the Treaty of 1866. The Cherokee Nation, from what I read, is citing the Act of April 26, 1906, which is another treaty which supersedes the 1806 treaty, makes it null and void. And what that treaty says is that as of December 1st, 1905, no person shall be enrolled as a citizen. No person shall be enrolled as a citizen or a freedman. Freedman is what they call the former slaves. So they're differentiating whether or not someone could be enrolled as a free citizen or a freedman of the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Cherokee, Creek, or Seminole nations. So they're differentiating, and this is very important because it's coming down as to whether or not these treaties spelled out the freedmen as citizens of the nation. In Section 3 of the Act of April 26, 1906, it states Cherokee freedmen shall include only such persons as African descent, either free colored, remember I said free black people living on the Cherokee Nation land. So.
All right. We had open mic here on It's My House. I got a special guest, and now you guys heard me talk about Clubhouse, which I think is an absolutely fabulous audio app. But I went in, and somebody that I met on there, he's got a very interesting concept, which, you know, we're going to tap in on it and see if we can organize some things. Let's see, we have Mr. Michael Thomas on this morning. Good morning, Mr. Thomas.
Good morning, Vaban, and thank you very much for connecting with me.
Share with us your concept.
Yes, it is a concept of 1,000 great minds assembling and unifying under a corporate entity, 1,000 great minds. It's like a team. It's like a football team. It's like a basketball team, whereby the players show up on the field. They show up on the court, and they are full-time at this. And if you look at the pro football players and the pro football teams, they get paid very well. The team that I am proposing of 1,000 great minds is like a football or a basketball team, or like a law firm or a medical firm or an architect firm or an engineering firm, where you have partners who are full-time, not part-time. This is not a part-time objective because it is big business. Now, here's the business, the unique selling proposition of 1,000 great minds. We have to unify in order to head up a newly developed nationwide housing program that I wrote myself. The nationwide housing program enables every desiring person in the country, all 3,142 U.S. counties, coast to coast, Atlantic to the Pacific, to get a house, in a car, truck, van, or SUV, debt-free. No one turned down. This is a huge undertaking. Why? Because we intend to serve 50 million people. We need a huge team. It is a wealth proposition. We intend to deliver 50 million homes and 50 million cars to 50 million people in an 18-month time frame. That is the time frame which the 1,000 great minds must produce the money for these home buyers to buy their homes and cars. It's just like a mother and a father buying a child a bicycle. They save the money over a course of time, and when Christmas comes or whatever, they buy the bicycle, except we're buying homes and cars. Now, we don't look at that like some big objective, like it's something we can't achieve. We'll be successful. It's just a mental thing. It's a mindset. It's a business set. It's a mind lock. Now, how do we produce this capital for 50 million people to get 50 million homes and 50 million cars? I tell you, it is an $11 trillion transaction because we produce $220,000 tax-free for each person to buy the home and car. Now, some people will say there's not enough space. There are not enough homes in the multiple listing service. Housing prices are too high. They're going up. Nonetheless, I have concluded that dogs have houses, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, central air, heat, carpet, sleeping king, queen-size bed, riding luxury cars. They have no rent, mortgage, or car payments to pay. So we want to bring the consciousness of the people in the United States first, because we intend to go to all countries, Fallen Habitat, who's already in 78 countries. We want to bring the consciousness level up of the people in the United States first. We want to do one. We want to make it simple. We want to do one country. The first country, the pilot country, United States. So we want to do this in the United States first and then move to other countries. We're going to spin off 9 core business. I'm missing something here, but I can still go on to elaborate that it spins off 9 core nationwide businesses. The bank is the first business, you know, that we inherit, and that $11 trillion goes through our bank. Because when you multiply 50 million times $220,000, that's $11 trillion that goes through Bank of Africa America. It spins off our real estate unit. All 3,142 U.S. counties as buyers' exclusive representatives in the purchases of their homes. It spins off our land development and construction unit. We build the homes for those home buyers who want their homes to be built. We buy the land, take the money out of our bank, buy the land, build the homes for them. The fourth unit is our insurance company. They insure their homes and cars through our insurance unit. And also we have the environmental engineering unit where we do recycling of their furniture, recycling of their metal. We have infrastructure in all 3,142 counties for them to donate that stuff. We sell that stuff, bank that capital. It comes from that. Also we have the film production unit where about 1,000 great minds will be doing our own film production. We have the capital to hire Halle Berry, Will Smith, Denzel Washington, on their own volition. Also, we have the Foreign Exchange Currency Trading Unit and what I call the Adult Elementary Technology School Unit to educate adults on technology all over the world. And finally, we have the Employment Staffing Unit deployed in all 3,142 U.S. counties. Out of those 50 million people, employ 10 million people in a day. And we get $50 per head. We capitalize $500 million that day just on the employment staffing unit. And those other units, they spin off capital like that too. So this is a wealth proposition of 1,000 great minds. It is not small business. It's big business. It takes full-time devotion. But I have to say that you become wealthy doing this. So this is just, in conclusion, this is just what comes out of my mind. Now, when we add what comes out of the rest of the 1,000 great minds' mind, the other 999 folk, it's a proposition that is it's a phenomenon. It will create phenomenons because when you walk out to the edge of the scope of what I see and what I've said and what I've written, you will see more. So 1,000greatminds.com is the website. It's an elementary website. The $1 million, $2 million, $10 million website won't be set up until the attorneys, the five attorneys and the five accountants, set up our lab. We sit before five attorneys and five accountants for 12 hours. It's $150,000 cost for that, for 12 hours to go over the joint venture agreement, non-compete, non-disclosure, also to protect your rights and interests in the intellectual properties that you create yourself, because 1,000 Great Minds is a bank. We shark tank our own ideas. We take the money out of our bank. There's no second, third-party interference. And we take that money out and capitalize your own ideas, because that's what produces the capital for the people to get the homes in the first place. And so our position is wealth creators, wealth developers, and wealth managers. That's what we do. We are wealth creators, wealth developers, and wealth managers by way of buying, creating, and developing businesses. If you'd like to get more information, go to 1000greatminds.com. Send your information through. Love to give you more information about. You have a group, you know, that we need to do a Zoom on. Love to do it. We got to get these 1,000 Great Minds by May 31st. Thank you very much, Vavon, for taking out the time and allowing me to let the audience know about this phenomenon.
Now,
thank you.
You have Clubhouse meetings. For those who don't know what Clubhouse is, explain what Clubhouse is and how can they tap in on to what you're doing on Clubhouse.
Yeah, so in Clubhouse, I usually go into the Buying the Block Clubhouse room called Buying the Block. You join the Buying the Block, and I always show up on there. I was on there just a moment ago, and Vavon connected with me. I had Black Biz Unify for big success, and I attract people into the room, and I tell them the same thing that I just mentioned to you just a moment ago. So Buying the Block is the Clubhouse room. You go into Clubhouse, and you click the greenhouse on there, and you join the Buying the Block room. And there's a bell on there. When you see me, there's a bell. You hit my picture, and there's a bell. And you hit that bell, and every time I show up in the clubhouse, you'll get an alarm saying that Mike's in the clubhouse about 1,000 Great Minds and the Howie Moore Nationwide Get a House Debt-Free Program.
Now, you mentioned how many counties in the United States?
There are 3,142 U.S. counties in all 50 states.
Okay, hold it. If you got time.
Yes, sir.
Let's do, all right, hold it. I'm looking up something right here. I'm trying to get a visual on this. County in USA. I'm going by population. All right, we'll hold it. All right, Arlington County, what now? Wait a minute. Smallest county in U.S. Smallest county in USA by population. It still goes back. Arlington, right, the smallest population county in the United States. All right, is Loving County, Texas. All right, Loving County, Texas. I'm on the Wikipedia page now. And I've got some land not too far from there. All right, Loving County in the United States state of Texas, that county has... You know what, for people who are we're all online. Go to any search engine and put in Loving County, Texas, all right? And then you can read along with me, all right? Loving County, Texas has a population of 64 people. 64 people. Now, on the Wikipedia page, there's a county map of the state of Texas, and highlighted in red, you'll see Loving County. And my interest is peaked there because I've got some land in Presidio County. I got 10 acres there, and that's not that far from Loving County. Now, Loving County has a total of 64 people. Now, if we scroll down on the Wikipedia page of Loving County, tap on you'll see history, geography, then you'll see communities. So you tap on the communities. Now, we see in Loving County, there's one town in the whole county. Then there are three ghost towns, Hay Flat, Texas, Porterville, Texas, and Woody, Texas. So I'm going to get into ghost towns later, but not this podcast. Right? So let's go to Mentone, Texas. Mentone, Texas has a population of 19 people. All right. Now, the reason why I asked about the counties, Michael, is
yes, sir.
If I can, I'm a little guy, okay, as far as business goes. I've got some land in Presidio County, Texas, that I purchased like maybe 4 years ago now. I purchased 10 acres for a total of $2,000. That includes paperwork and all that. The actual price, if you break it, now that's $200 an acre. So, and I know where out of the 3,000 plus counties in the United States, I look for counties that have small populations, and then I look for communities where, and that's where you can find some, you can get in cheap if you got a small budget. So, okay, so let's take it back to, and there are 50 states. So, essentially, what's this town in, well, first thing, let me break it down this way. Okay, out of, and I'm just brainstorming, thinking out loud. I'm looking at, all right, I'm looking for, there are 50 states, I'm looking for, well, you know what, hold it, let me put, before I even get to that. After I've located, now we've located the smallest county in the United States with 64 people. We also located, now there's only one town in that whole county. They have three ghost towns, but only one town. Now, where are other people living in it? You also have people living in these ghost towns. They just don't register the name in the census for whatever reason. So, what? And this town is called Mentone, Texas, M-E-N-T-O-N, Texas. I'm looking for one or two people, boots on the ground in that particular county. And because that way I can get, you know, what you're talking about is getting your program established in that particular neck of the woods. Anyway, your thoughts on, you know, you want to reach all 3,100 counties, or how do you want to do it? Hello? Oh, I don't think his light's still there. Mike, you still there? Okay, I think we lost him, although his light's still there. Okay. In any event, all right, we're going to have him back on, but look for him on Clubhouse. We'll be covering Prolific Builders. That's going to be a series for us, as well as the here we go. All right, I think we got him back. He had to call in on another line. Blog yes. Talks like that. All right, you there, Mike?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I heard you.
Did you hear what I said about Mentone, Texas?
Yes.
Did you hear what I said about Mentone, Texas?
About the 10 acres and one town in the whole county.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you get the numbers that I put out on Loving County, Texas, and Mentone, Texas?
Uh, the population of 64.
Right. And they only have one town in their whole county, and that town has a population of 19 people.
Right. We didn't know the land area of the county, but if someone wanted to buy in that area, you know, and it's feasible, you know, that's land area, you know, like you said, cheap, you know, that could be developed.
Right. Because I'm looking at...
And bring the economy to the county.
There you go. That's what I'm thinking. Because I'm looking at, all right, if you can find, like, the... Well, matter of fact, let's... all right, you're in... I won't name the state over there, but...
North Carolina.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Cool.
Let me... Smallest county in North Carolina. Hold it. Smallest county. All right. Smallest county in North Carolina. Okay, that's Clay County. Clay County.
Yes, I was.
Doggone it. All right, Clay County. All right, Clay County, here we go. Clay County, all right, there's a county map of the state of North Carolina. Clay County has a population of 11,089 people. The communities that are in Clay County, now Clay County has one town. I love counties that have one town, all right? It's Hayesville. That's the county seat and the largest town. How many people live in Hayesville? The popular, I love it, 311 people. And then let's see. Let's go a little bit further. Well, you know, before you even go even further, the reason why I like my strategy is because in a town that's got a population of 300 people, you can personally get to know the mayor real fast and develop relationships with the mayor and the city council or whatever government they might have in that town. Like, for instance, one of the places that I go, the mayor in a Oklahoma. Every time I've gone out there, the mayor and or she's been mayor of that town, and she's on the city council, picks me up at the airport and makes sure and drives me back to the airport every time I go. And I've been able to pick up two pieces of property in this particular town that's got less than 300 people. No more than 350
people. That's an amazing bond. No, I don't know of anyone else who does that and thinks that way, and that is the reason for having the collective IQ of 1,000 great minds from all work and business profession from A to Z, bringing all their skill sets, know-how, know-what, intellectual capital, business acumen, and experiences to the table for that specific reason that you said. That is huge. We could establish relationships.
Right.
Town mayors, politicians.
Right, and I'm gonna tell you how this happened to be. I have a house in Washington D.C. Still have it. And matter of fact, this is how this podcast I've been doing it for 8 consecutive years now. It's called It's My House. So a squatter tried to take my house in Washington D.C. And I was figuring, man, well, if I can get some other homeowners together, some other landlords together, then, you know, we can start a membership-based organization and raise money, and, you know, we can lobby the city council people plus the mayor's office. Now, in a city the size of Washington, D.C. has got a population of anywhere from 500,000 to over 600,000 people now. And to get somewhere politically in that town, you got to be bankrolling $5 to $6 million in an election. And that's why I thought of, all right, if I can get some other homeowners together and other landlords together, we can have a membership organization and use the membership money. It'll have to go into the hundreds of thousands of millions so we can bankroll elections in D.C. to get some legislation on the books. So I wasn't getting any kind of cooperation from other homeowners and landlords in D.C. So one thing led to the next. I'm not going to go through the whole story. I discovered little towns. All right. And I was covering, because we do all kind of podcasts on it. We do trending topics from real estate stuff to bringing people like you on to the Wills, all kind of stuff on it. So that's how it wasn't the original plan to start out that way, but then I started looking at other towns. So, I've got 4 acres here. I'm in Florida right now, and we're working on that. Now, I don't know the mayor of the town that we're in Florida, but the population is so small that I have the 4 acres in Florida that it's not even listed in any Census Bureau tract. All right. The town, at least the town that I first got into in Oklahoma, they're listed in this town of Hayesville, North Carolina, is on a tract. Now, the idea I'm putting out there is this, and this is why I'm glad I ran into you. There are hundreds of Hayesville, North Carolina's in the United States. And in places like Hayesville, North Carolina, that's what I call the real United States. A place where you can go to where it's not overly regulated, because if you go to like a Durham, North Carolina, a Raleigh, North Carolina, a Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California, towns that have over 50,000 people, actually, over 20,000 people, the bigger the town, the more political, the more rules and regulations, the less freedom that you have to do what you want to do business-wise. All right? So now, let's go back. Now, Hayesville is how many people? Anywhere from 311 people to no more than 483 people live in Hayesville, North Carolina. Now let's go back to this county, Clay County, North Carolina. All right. Now once again, it's the we've discovered two towns. There's a lot. Look for counties that only have one town. Okay. Now, unincorporated communities are even better. Now, there's Brasstown, North Carolina, is 12 square miles, 21 square miles. They don't even list the population. Towns that don't list their population are even better than the towns that have a population of 400 people or less. So Brassville, North Carolina, let's see, what else do we have here? Warney County, that's W-A-R-N-E. No population listed. And they have Tuskegee, T-U-S-Q-U-I-T-T-E-E, North Carolina, All right. There's a little bit more information on that. And I'm butchering the name, but so apologize, North Carolina. Tuskegee, originally Tuskegee, is an unincorporated community located in Clay County, North Carolina. It's a Cherokee Indian word, means where the water dogs left. A water dog, sometimes called a mud puppy, is a type of salamander. It is bordered on the north by Fires Creek Bear Reserve within the Nantahala National Forest. The Tuskegee Mountain Range includes the Tuskegee Vault Ball, which is 5,240 square feet. They have a little bit more on this. There is no population listed. What's tomorrow? Thursday? You know, Thursday, we're going to go county and town hunting on where to look for stuff. So, look, Michael, thank you for coming on. People, how can they get you on Clubhouse again? I think he disappeared again. All right, and on that, well, hold, let me see if he's here. Well, he might be on Clubhouse. Okay, Michael, you there? Okay. On that note, it's almost 12 noon here. We're going to wrap it up for today. Friday, our assignment is we're going to do a movie review on the film Black Gestapo. So you got tonight, you got tomorrow night, and we're going to continue with our Prolific Builder series, 2 months versus 2 hours, because tomorrow we're going to be looking for places that are good, where you can go look and buy some property on the cheap, land on the cheap. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.